the first question is from Andrew McKay. What specific powers will the Citizens Advisory Committee have?
I think that's still up to them, as they're going to be doing discussions and seeing what's happened. I think at this point, as a mayor's committee, it's envisioned that they're able to make recommendations back to the mayor for operations. And if there are things in ordinance that need to change, they'll be able to make that to council.
So I was concerned a little bit by the vagueness of the answer over the powers, but I also understand that the CAC, the Citizens Advisory Committee, is still in process, right? The mayor has now named Haley Morissette from Dream Defenders and Kyle Cole from the Graffiti Bridge protest as his nominees to be on the committee. You've got PC Wu has put forward Laura McKnight. She is a local engaged citizen. You've got Sherry Myers. District 2 has put forward former city council member Charles Baer. And then you've got Annie Terhar, according to the mayor, has put forward Drew Buchanan, mayoral candidate and local LGBT activist. We'll see. So, so far, three white people put forward, two black people put forward. I think it'd be a weird look for the advisory committee if it's majority white. I don't think that automatically means it can't do a job. I just, that's going to look a little bit strange if that winds up being the case. Joining us now, we have Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff's Chief Deputy and also former Pensacola Police Department Chief. Chief, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, I am doing well. Let's start there for just a second, and you can feel free to, defer because, obviously in your role as, a chief deputy for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, you're no longer with the city, and maybe you don't want to tread in the other waters or whatever. That's fine. But I was just curious, you guys had a Citizens Advisory Committee at one time when you were at least assistant chief, and I think as you were chief. And if you want, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on how well or how poorly kind of what that can do for the department.
Yeah, I think that any agency would want to have a dialogue with the citizens. That's why we have town hall meetings. That's why we have, we've had recently a safety in the place of worship. We have the Citizens Law Enforcement Academy. While these are training classes, there are also opportunities for people to give feedback. And we oftentimes talk about incidences and because we want to know what people are thinking. So, yes, you are right. We had, when I was a captain and then assistant chief for 6 years and a police chief for 5 years, we had a citizens liaison committee in which the council members would appoint one member, and then we would meet at City Hall, and we would have, I would have our internal affairs investigator there, and I would have probably a member of the patrol captain would go there as well, and we would open it up, and anything went. They could discuss whatever they wanted to talk about. They could talk about speeding in their neighborhoods. They could talk about courtesy. Sometimes we had activists that would come in while they were not on the member. These particular activists were not on the membership. We were open, an open forum, so that they could come in and explain whatever issues that they wanted to present. And I thought it worked pretty well. Again, you had a number of people that would come in, and then the board itself, the advisory board itself, would comment about it, and then they would ask questions to the staff. They would ask questions to me as the assistant or the police chief. They would ask questions as to the investigator, because a lot of it is legal. A lot of it is there's some union issues there. And I actually thought that the dialogue was pretty well. I will tell you that there were not very many complaints. There really were not. So it wasn't a whole lot that we could, do. But the value of it was there was this open dialogue. There was this opportunity for citizens and for the members of the panel to have these discussions. And I will tell you that policies had changed because of that. We went back to our agency and said, hey, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Because sometimes these things aren't something that we had seen when we formulated the policy. But as we talk to the people that, that within the community, we find out that may be unduly burdensome for some people.
Well, it's to me, that value is the sort of age-old issue of the outside eye sees stuff you do that you've so long done that you take for granted that you don't even think to question anymore. And, and sometimes those fresh eyes, they may be wrong, okay, but they can also see stuff and you kind of look at it and you're like, that is a little bit odd. Why do we do that? So that's good to hear. Now, it seems to me like one of the key issues is going to be making sure these people really understand law enforcement, that they've probably been on a ride ride-along or two, that they've maybe ideally gone through the Citizens Police Academy, you know, that kind of stuff. When you were engaged with this, were the folks well-experienced and informed, or, you know, what was the background? I mean, you agree that kind of would be important stuff?
I think it is. I don't know that I would say that they were well-informed, but they were certainly informed. We had a requirement that they would go to the Citizens Law Enforcement Academy, and not just to get them on our side, but because we go over specific things like this is a patrol function, this is an investigative function, this is the policy regarding this, this is why we do this, and how difficult it is. And that's the hard part, to let people know how difficult it is to arrest somebody, to put someone in cuffs, someone who is not willing to get in cuffs. As you've seen in this most recent video, if you are not wanting to get into cuffs, if you are a person that's willing to fight, it is difficult and it can get ugly. And so we expected the people that are on our board, our advisory board committee, to understand that at least. I mean, you don't have to go through it all, but we also explained what the taser's capabilities are, but also what the taser's limitations are. What the pepper spray's capabilities are, but also what the limitations are on the usage of pepper spray, so that when they had their conversation, they go through the use of force continuum just like we would. Did you try the hands? Yes. Did you give them a warning? Yes. Did you try the pepper spray? Yes. Did you try the taser? Yes. And then you had to go hands on. And a lot of times they understood as they began to see more and more of these types of cases. But I will tell you, there were times when the membership of the committee and the people that came in and pretty much presented their story, we were all like, we're not wild about it. And that's one thing too, that a lot of what we would bring to them is the disciplinary, the quarterly disciplinary reports.
Yeah.
So we would bring to light some things that they wouldn't even be aware of. We would say this deputy was disciplined for courtesy. This deputy was disciplined for, you know, for use of he pulled his handgun when he probably could have used the taser. And so there was some very meaningful dialogue that went back and forth, and a lot of understanding with regards to that. But I will tell you that by and large, the town halls that we had, the opportunities and neighbor associations went a long way towards understanding within our communities.
You know, and that's another aspect of sort of police culture that, you know, does not get much publicity, for reasons that maybe make sense. But, you know, there isn't a lot of public disclosure of these were the disciplines we did. These, you know, because maybe if people saw more of that, they would feel more comfortable that there is an ongoing active monitoring of behavior and behavior modification when that behavior goes astray. Chief, there's something else I know is very close to your heart. You were a long time on the SWAT team with PPD. I know that is something that is very near and dear to your heart. And I was just kind of curious to get your reaction to this. Elsewhere in Florida, the whole SWAT team basically resigned from being on the SWAT team. People just don't understand. That's the culture has changed completely. You used to have to turn people away, and now you can barely get enough people to get on the team to begin with, right?
I'll tell you that one of my most memorable days in law enforcement was a date that Chief Norman Chapman called me up and said, "Hey, you've been selected to become our eighth member of the Pensacola Police Department SWAT team," and because it took a lot of training, a lot of effort to get on there, and we really had a great experience on that team itself. As I understand it, these people left the team for a couple of reasons. One is they felt like they did not have the support of their command staff, and additionally, they felt like they were not being adequately trained and adequately equipped with the information and the equipment that they need.
Yeah.
Because if you task a SWAT team, doesn't just do routine stuff. The SWAT team gets called in when we have information that this guy's a bad guy, but he also has guns. He's also threatened people. The SWAT team goes in whenever someone is holed up in a room with a gun, with a potentially a hostage. The SWAT team goes in whenever someone's hidden in a four or five story brick building, and you have to slow to go from room to room. And there's an inherent danger to that. So the SWAT team members typically are very well trained. Typically they're very capable in what they do. But you've got to support them. You've got to say, we understand the difficult job that you have, and we will support you as long as you, you know, do not violate the law, as long as you don't go, go rogue on us. And we also have to make sure you have the top equipment, because we're putting you not just in harm's way, but we're putting you in a situation where you will go from room to room and increasingly dangerous situations. So to see a team or a number of the people that were a part of the team just quit, and understanding that it is based on the support of the administration,
yeah,
and understand that it is based on the lack of equipment, that's heartbreaking.
Well, and also, and I think people agency. And people don't really understand. I know this only because I know, you know, you and PPD so well, that, you know, you have to earn it, volunteer for it, and you do get a little bit of pay when you deploy, but it's, I mean, there's basically very little extra that you get for being in that high-risk environment, right?
That's correct. And no officer at the sheriff's office or at the police department when I was there trained more, and it was more time-consuming than the SWAT team.
Yeah.
I know our canine units do a lot of work, a lot of training, and they take their dog home, but the SWAT team is always training so that they can make sure that they are in tip-top condition, and they're fluid whenever they encounter a situation that has to be dealt with.
Absolutely.
So we're very proud of our SWAT teams, obviously, because they've been very successful. And I know at the police department we had years and years without having to fire a weapon because we were so efficient at getting to an individual and arresting that person before they could fire at us. Now, that's not to say they've never fired at us. I recall specifically one when we went out to a porch and the guy was only able to get one round off before we were able to subdue him with some non-lethal weaponry. So it's these are the best of the best, and I think that when they decide to leave, because typically they're also the most motivated.
Right.
When they decide to leave, there's some issues they need to look at in that agency.
Yeah, absolutely. And, most definitely. By the way, we did want to give a plug for the Safety in the Place of Worship that is coming up on June 23rd. If people want more information about that, they can call the ACSO or they can go to the Facebook page. Chief Chip Simmons, sir, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Take care.